come. Oh, no, swear on me oath, there's a fox.
Trammond chuckled as he patted the fox's cheek tenderly.
Of course you will, matey, because if you don't, the things my crew threatened to do to you would be as nothing to what I'd do when I caught up with you. Listen now, here's what you'll do.
What about them?
Skalrag nodded towards his six-bound comrades.
Oh, don't fret your heart over that lot. Worms like that would be too much trouble as galley slaves. They'll be fish bait afore nightfall, mate.
Skalrag's former archers gave a muted moan of anguish. The slave compound was a circular palisade of upright logs, driven into the ground and bound together by ropes. It had a single gate, which was generally kept locked. Inside, the occupants shifted as best as they could for themselves. Most slept on their sack mattresses against the walls, some underneath a rough wooden awning that shaded part of the structure. At night, the slaves were allowed a fire in the centre of the dirt floor. Keela and the rest of the slaves had been on barricade duty all night, piling rubble and rocks against the gates to reinforce them against the battering ram. Now they sat locked inside the slave compound, relieved of quarry and field labours, whilst Marshank was under siege. Old Barkchan shook his head.
It's a bad business. If Badrag wins, we'll still be slaves here. However, if the victory goes to the Corsairs, we'll all end up as galley slaves after we've been forced to refloat their vessel or build a new ship. Slavery is bad enough, but the life of a galley slave is worse than death.
Amid the troubled muttering that followed, Keela came forward.
That's the bad news. Now here's some of the good. Before we were herded back in here at dawn, I checked the prison pit. There was no beast inside. Martin, Feldo, and Brome have escaped. They're free.
Bart John's chin quivered a little as he patted Keela's paw.
That is good news indeed. My son Feldo, a free creature. He'll bring help to us, you'll see.
Aye, and Martin too.
Hilgors, the old hedgehog, chimed in.
He's a tough one, that young mouse. He'll see that we get help of some sort.
The slaves nodded agreement, one or two of them even emitting low cheers. Barkjohn silenced them with a wave of his paw.
Keela, was there something else you wanted to say?
The young otter held a piece of sacking. It clinked as he strode about, speaking in a low, clear voice.
All very good, but what are we doing to help ourselves? It's no use just sitting here on our tails making fine speeches and waiting for others to do something. Look!
He flung the sacking open and weapons clattered to the ground.
Three knives, a spearhead and four slings. I collected them from dead vermin while they were working through the battle last night. There's a start to our armoury.
Purslane, a mother mouse, stepped forward carrying her infant. She took an axe head and a broken sword blade from inside the little one's shawl and added them to Keela's weapons.
I managed to get these. It's not much, but it's a start.
Others started to come forward and add their contributions.
This dagger's got no handle, but it's sharp.
It's the top from a long pike. It only needs a pole.
I've got a whip and these two arrows. The bow was too big to carry.
Pouch full of sling stones, the sling and this iron hook.
A hedgehog, little more than a baby, tottered out and threw his offering on the small pile of armaments.
Dagger and stones to throw.
The otter called Tolgru began gathering them up.
Well done. We'd best hide these until the right time comes along. I'll bury them in the earth underneath my pallet.
Hilgors nodded approvingly.
Good work. Remember now, stick together, help each other, steal anything you can from Badrang's creatures. Each day, my friends, we will become stronger, more determined. Only our bodies are held in slavery. Our minds and hearts are free.
The meeting ended. Tulgru began burying the weapons. Droop the bank vole pretended to be sleeping, but he was noting through half-closed eyes the spot where Tulgru was digging. Slave beasts snuffled and moaned in their slumbers. The fire burned low in the crowded compound, and stars in the soft dark sky looked down on the misery of the wretched creatures below as they slept, all save two. Keela was watching Droop. Dawnlight found the small boat that had been carried far out by the ebbing tide. It bobbed about on the heaving grey waves like a leaf in the storm. Feldo, Martin and Brome bailed with paws and oar blades, trying to splash the water over the sides. They were fighting a losing battle. Rose stood in the stern, straining her eyes for a sight of land. All she could see were mountainous grey-green waves wherever she looked. Grun sat miserably, blocking the leak with his bottom, bailing with his little ladle as the boat settled ever lower in the water.
Brr, I can't swim. It'd be a shame to finish up drowned.
Something struck the side of the boat, causing the timbers to creak. Brom looked up from his bailing.
I hope that was a rock or something floating by. I'd hate to think it was a big fish.
Rose peered down into the water. Her eyes went wide with shock. She looked up, pretending to scan the horizon. Her brother shook his head.
Come on, Rosie, you can't fool me. I saw you gaping into the water. What's down there?
It's a big fish.
They stopped bailing. Feldo chuckled half-heartedly.
Big enough for us to catch and eat.
Rose shook her head.
The other way round, friend. It's big enough to catch and eat us.
There was another thump against the boat's side. Grump sat tight, staring uncomfortably at the sky.
Brr, I ate the thing on my poor bottom. A poking sweet boat with a good fish swimming under eye.
The fish struck again. This time it fractured the planking and seawater squirted in as the boat settled lower. Martin grabbed an oar.
This will make a good float, Feldo. You and Brom hang on to the other oar. I'll take this one with Rose and Grum. If we get separated, we'll meet up at Noonvale. Look out! Here we go!
The boat filled up, seawater rushing in over the sides as it dropped from beneath them, plummeting into the depths below. In an instant, they were all in the sea, struggling and kicking out as they held onto the oars. Submerging his head, Martin gazed down into the depths. He could dimly make out the gigantic shape of some deep-sea fish as it chased the sinking craft into the greeny depths. As he pulled his head from the waters, Rose was shouting,
Brom! Feldo! Over here! Can you reach us?
The young mouse and the squirrel were being swept away on the crest of a big roller, whilst Martin's oar was being pushed under, weighted as it was by three creatures. Instantly, Martin released his hold on the oar. It bobbed up and began travelling away from him on the waves, and he struck out after it. Rose paddled madly, turning the oar so it would drift nearer to Martin. Grum helped as much as he could, calling out,
Martin, swim over here. See if you can catch hold of my paw.
Painfully, Martin came fractionally nearer his friends on the oar. Rose kicked back with all her might to hold the oar from being swept off, and Grum stretched himself full length in the water. The sun began breaking through the wind-swept grey cloud masses, bringing with it a heavy summer rain, slashing and hammering onto the face of the deeps. Half-blinded and spitting seawater, Martin felt his outstretched paw come in contact with Grum's foot paw. He clung on furiously for dear life as Rose cried out,
Hang there, Martin. Just tread water. It'll relieve the weight on this paddle. When I'm tired, I'll change places with you.
Rose kicked out with the waves, sending the oar skimming along through the rain-washed sea. Feldo had his mouth open to the sky, trying to drink in some rainwater. Brom had heaved himself up on the oar. Anxiously, he scanned the sunny, storm-swept wastes.
There's no sign of them. The waves are too high.
Before Feldo had a chance to reply, the water beneath them heaved, and they were both lifted high into the air. The big fish had hauled the sinking boat around like an empty pea pod. It had found something to play with. Its huge body buffeted and banged the boat about. Feldo was still holding onto the oar as the fish temporarily lost interest in the boat and charged at the oar. The squirrel saw the wide mouth gaping through the water, rows of pointed white teeth and a cavernous pink interior whooshed through the sea towards him. Feldo let go of the oar and submerged. He felt a thump on his back as the giant creature seized the oar and made off with it, frolicking and leaping, sometimes half its own length above the surface. Suddenly, it dived and was gone. The hull of the upturned boat struck his head as Brom leaned over and seized his ears.
Got you, matey!
Scrambling and kicking, Feldo managed to haul himself onto the upturned keel, where Brom was clinging with all paws.
Phew, that was a close call. Still, fair exchange is no robbery. The fish can have the oar, we'll keep the boat.
Feldo wiped dashing rain from his eyes.
Let's hope that monster doesn't feel playful again and come back for the boat after he's chewed our oar up. Hang on to my tail and steady me, young'un. I'm going to take a look round for the others.
With Brom clinging to his tail, Feldo stood gingerly and surveyed the stormy scene. Sunlight shafted down through the cloud masses, which were showing areas of bright blue sky between them. The wind whipped the wave tops into white foam, sending massive rollers combing across the main.
Any sign of them?
Feldo shaded his eyes from the rain with a paw.
Not a glimpse, but there's a dark splotch on the horizon that must mean land. He must be flood-tied. We're headed straight for it.
Brome was not sure whether it was rain or tears in his eyes.
Thank the seasons for that. I wouldn't become a seafarer at any price. Leave the water to the fishes, I say.
The morning wore on, but the rain showed no signs of abating. Grum clung to the oar, half asleep, with Rose hanging onto his footpaw. Martin paddled doggedly on, pushing the oar in front of him, his body numbed from the cold of the sea and the driving rain. The sun was now colouring the sea in glorious tints. Rose stared at it through salt-rimmed eyes, lost in its beauty for a moment, until Martin's voice cut into her reverie.
The sun sets in the west, doesn't it?
Suppose it does.
This is the eastern sea. If it were morning, the sun would rise on its horizon. Don't you see what that means, Rose?
I'm too tired to work it out, Martin. Tell me what it means.
It means that we have to face inland to see the sun in the afternoon. So if we can see the sun in front of us now, we are travelling towards land.
Rose came fully awake. Hauling herself up upon Grum's back, she gave a loud yell.
Land!
It was still distant, but it was definitely land. Dark cliffs showed against the sky. She patted her mole friends, wet back heartily.
Land, Grum, it's land ahead!
I won't believe it until these here digging claws can scrape it, Missy. And then, if it be so, this here beast won't never even be caught drinking water again, never mind a swimming in it.
Martin found renewed strength and kicked out harder towards firm ground.
Chapter 10.
Like the three prisoners in your pit, for instance. They are not there anymore. They've escaped.
Hisk spun Droop around to face him.
You're lying. No beast could escape the prison pit.
Droop let a sly smile cross his lips.
Then go and see for yourself. If I'm lying, you can always kill me later. I'm not going anywhere.
Hisk grabbed Droop by the neck there and held the knife to his throat.
Then I'll go and see for myself. If you're lying, I'll come back and kill you. Scowrag won't save you. Or didn't you know he's been missing since last night?
Badrang was on the wall top when Hisk sidled up and whispered in the tyrant's ear.
The three beasts we had in the prison pit are gone.
Badrang narrowed his eyes.
Gone? What do you mean? They died or been killed?
No, sire. They've escaped.
Rubbish! No beast escapes my prison pit.
That's what I thought, sire. But they've gone, sure enough. I went down and checked myself. The strange thing is that there's no sign of escape.